Okay, let's get started. It's always, this is a little loud. It's always hard to be the one doing the workshop right after lunch when the post-lunch slumber begins to come in. They should have a large pot of coffee just as you come in the door here. When Mark invited me to come this weekend, he asked me to do this workshop, and he gave me the title and the description of it so that I had very little freedom. And he basically said he wanted me to follow up my lecture from the first night with talking about how it's possible to have warm and winsome film discussions. Margie and I have wanted to be faithful in evangelism and apologetics, getting to know our non-Christian neighbors, and we don't particularly have gifts in evangelism. I have met some people over the course of a lifetime where if you drop them into a room with strangers and then you come back in 10 minutes, they will be in a circle of people hotly discussing the great things in life. Now, I don't know how they do that. And every attempt on my part to do that has been an utter embarrassing failure, where I just wasn't invited back to that group of people ever again. So we don't haven't had gifts in that area, but very early on we realized that in particular everybody was talking about films, and films talk about the things that really matter in life. I had learned that way back in the 60s, is going to date me, when I was in college, and we were watching the films of Ingmar Bergman. Have you guys ever watched the films of Ingmar Bergman? You have to be in a history of film class in order to see them now. But films like The Seventh Seal and others were expressing some of the deep questions, particularly through a lens of existentialism. And I remember staying up very late at night and having long, heated discussions with people on campus where we basically solved most of the world's philosophical problems. And that was a very exciting sort of thing. And although some of those discussions didn't go very far because we were young and somewhat foolish, at the same time, it gave us a clue that this was a venue in which the big questions could be addressed because they were already brought up on the screen, and then we could talk about them. And so Margie and I have just tried to be faithful over the years. We moved 3 years ago, 3.5 years ago, but before that, we lived for 30 years in a home in Rochester, and a block and a half from us was a coffee house. And when they put in the coffee house, Margie and I decided that we were going to actually change our family budget, because although it's cheaper to make coffee at home, and in many cases better, nevertheless, we thought this was a place where we wanted to try to develop some relationships. And so at least once a week, usually twice a week, I would walk down to the coffee shop. And one of the things I just decided to do is, because all the baristas were younger, much younger than me, I would ask them what films they were watching, what was going on. And I also figured out when the coffee shop didn't seem to be as full of patrons, so they weren't quite as busy making espresso and lattes and all the rest. And it was interesting, because after about 3 months, I would be able to walk in to the coffee shop and two things would happen automatically. One, a barista would start making my coffee, because I always ordered the same thing. So they would begin making it without my even ordering it. And the second thing that would happen is people would start shouting out film titles. And I would know immediately which films they were watching and which ones we could talk about. And it was fun, because after a while, they discovered that I was a safe person. I really wanted to know what it was that they thought about these films, why it resonated with them, what it was in this storyline or in this plot, what was being expressed, which really seemed to speak to the reality of their own lives. And so I would sip my coffee, and I would have these very fractured conversations because they were dealing with other customers at the same time, and we would be talking about movies. I didn't see all the movies that they saw. I didn't see the same things in the same movies that they saw, and some of the discussions were just not very meaningful. But every once in a while, by God's grace, they would start talking about some scene, often a scene that was just a throwaway to me. It was just part of the story. And suddenly, we got into something that was much deeper. I remember one time I went in, and somebody said, it's the Royal Tenenbaums. I don't know if you saw it, a Wes Anderson film. You have to like Wes Anderson to enjoy the Royal Tenenbaums. And it was interesting. It was a young man, and he and I fell into talking and talking about this film. And I asked him several questions about it, and he was talking about it. And then he said, you know what mattered to me the most about that film? And I said, I'd really like to know. He said, said it was the scene in which the mother, played by Angelica Houston, brought the new husband home, and he said, call me Dad. And all the kids around the table weren't able to call him Dad. And he said, that is the story of my life. And he said to me, I dread the holidays more than any other time of the year, because I have to spend my time with three families. Three families, because there's been multiple marriages now. And he said, everyone wants me to call them Dad and Mom. And he said, it tears my heart out in every place. He said, I always pray that Christmas will get over quickly, or that because I live in Minnesota, there will be a storm and I won't even be able to go. And suddenly I realized a scene in a movie that frankly just passed me by. I saw it. I don't relate to it. I didn't think anything of it. I thought it fit in the storyline. I thought it was coherent in the dialogue. But it didn't move me deeply. Suddenly I realized that that scene had opened up a window to the heart in a very deep and a very profound way. So I think that it's in the process of caring about people and about the stories that mean a great deal to them that we begin to get, potentially, by the grace of the Holy Spirit, a window into their heart and life. So what Margie and I have tried to do over the years is to simply invite people into our home to watch a movie. And I want to tell you some of the things that we've learned about that process over the years. We're still doing it as it seems appropriate. And the thing that's been really fun to us is that people of all ages have been willing to do it. Now, one other thing before we get started. My biggest problem has not been the non-Christians who have joined us. It's been the Christians. And there's lots of times in which Christians hear what we're doing and they'll say, hey, can I come along? And so I'll say, okay. And they'll come, and within 2 or 3 minutes, they're in the middle of some passionate discussion of the Book of Romans or something, which is totally inappropriate for the people that are sitting in the room. And so I take them out to lunch the following week, and I pick up the tab, but I also tell them, could we just discuss what happened this last week? And it's been very interesting because most of them, about halfway through that set of questions, have said, I think I'm catching a drift here. You'd like me to keep quiet more, wouldn't you? And I said, oh, That is such a good insight. It's really good. I think, and those of you who are leaders within the Christian community, I think we need to help one another, our fellow believers, be able to learn to interact with people who perhaps are hostile to the faith in order to find ways to talk with them, which doesn't end the conversation but allows it to continue. And that's really significant, it seems to me. All right, I want to give you some ideas as to what we've learned from hosting film discussions, and hopefully we'll have some time for Q&A and discussion as well. Okay, the first thing I would say is this. Francis Schaeffer used to talk about something called pre-evangelism. It's what needs to be understood and accepted before a person is ready and able to bow before Jesus Christ as Lord and Savior. In Jonathan Edwards' day, most of the people in Massachusetts around him, except for Native Americans, probably already understood the biblical story. If they believed in God, and most people did, the vast majority did, they probably believed in the biblical God. My guess is that Jonathan Edwards would have had to hike many, many miles before bumping into many Buddhists, Hindus, or Muslims. They simply weren't around. All right. Now, there were also slaves in Massachusetts at this time, and so there were some that would have been holding other ideas. But perhaps most people, as you understand, most people would have understood something of the biblical framework, and so therefore there was very little in front of what they needed to know before they could begin to learn about Jesus Christ, his work on the cross, and what it means to bow before him. By the time you get to the days of Francis Schaeffer, in the 50s, 60s, 70s, in this country, things have really changed. We're now in a period of time which is often referred to as modernity. And therefore, more and more people had to talk about more and more things. It's what Holly Ordway has been talking about in her lectures, only not quite as extreme as today. And as you can see for today, I think the thing has been extended in a much greater way. And I'm not going to go into why I think that's the case, but with the unchurched people, with those that do not have a background, and with the cross currents, both philosophically and artistically and sociologically, that are going on in our culture, even people who use the same language often mean very different things. But you notice I've put an X in there that isn't sort of an added hurdle. It seems to me that we also are facing a different situation, in that more people are hostile to the faith today, and they are more skeptical of those of us who believe in it. Here is a thought experiment for you. Let's say that we broke right now and disperse through the city, suggest maybe we go to college campuses or something like that, and what we do is locate 10 people who are willing to say that they are not a Christian. My guess is it would be very easy. Okay? Probably could go downtown, throw a rock, and hit one. Okay? It would be very easy. 10 people. Now let's say that we then ask them this question. If you became a Christian today, if you became a Bible-believing Christian, let's use that language. If you became a Bible-believing Christian, do you think that you would become more creative, more interesting, more positive, more interested in the arts, community, and culture, more alive to what's going on around you, more involved in the community? Or, if you became a Bible-believing Christian today, do you believe that you would become more withdrawn, more negative, probably more judgmental, really quicker to criticize, eager to disagree, and less involved with the arts and culture. What do you think the majority would say? Yeah. And if you wonder if that's the case, I've asked people that question over the last few years, just when they find out that I'm a Christian and I can sense some hostility, I've asked them that. The question we need to ask ourselves is, why have they come to believe this? And let's cut to the chase. Why have we taught it to them? And I think that's a great challenge. It seems to me, and the reason I have this third line, is that Margie and I have felt that when we first invite people into our home, we have to first prove to them that Christianity is plausible, that we are safe people to be with, that we welcome them to say anything they want in our living room. If they wish to rant against God and against the church, it's okay with me. If they want to say that they don't believe, that's fine. I want them to know that we are safe people for them to be around. Now, does that mean we're pushovers? No. We'll be glad to talk about what we believe and why. We'd love to engage with that. And we are going to do that. But nevertheless, we want them to know that they're welcome. Does that make sense? So to some extent, I have felt like, if this wasn't being recorded, I'd tell you the term that I actually used. I think that at first, what we need to do is prove to them that we're not okay. Then we can begin pre-evangelism proper and get them ready to hear about the Lord Jesus Christ. Does that make sense? Okay. I've already mentioned this once before, but I want to talk a little bit about it. Listening is a gift of grace. True conversation is frightening because we lose control. And that's why I think most witnessing training is built around monologue. It's much more frightening if I just ask you questions about where you're coming from and what you believe, and I don't know where it's headed. But I let the conversation go because I'm willing to trust the Holy Spirit. Listening is hard work. Listening is the work of being fully present, fully attentive to the person who is speaking. Now, I like that definition. And the reason is because it starts with what I have to learn to do. And notice he uses the word fully twice. Fully attentive, fully present. That was one of the things that impressed me the most when I got to know Francis Schaeffer personally. Sit in his living room, and he just bore into you, looked you full in the face, in the eyes, and asked questions, and listened. And there were lots of times in which when I asked a question or when I raised something, he would ask a series of questions to get me to clarify what I was talking about before he even tried to give an answer. You're a bad listener because you're more interested in your own life. You usually just want to give advice. You're not comfortable with the darkness in your own life, and you're so reactive. When I read that, I thought, 4 out of 4. This is not good, you know. Do you see yourself in it at all? I think that learning to listen is a skill. Listening is so basic that we take it for granted. Unfortunately, most of us think of ourselves as better listeners than we really are. Most people won't really listen or pay attention to your point of view until they become convinced that you've heard and appreciated theirs. If we want the truth, we must make it safe for them to tell it. Some people have no idea how pressured and provoking their tone of voice is, but they come at you like a bad dentist. I think that's a lot of evangelical witnessing right there. Okay. Now, the bad dentist has really, I mean, it wants to solve, he wants to solve your dental problem, which is taking you to hell, okay? But nevertheless, you come across that way, and it ends the conversation rather than continues it. Okay, this is about film, so we better get to film. I want to show you a film clip. I don't know if you saw The Life of Pi. Did you see Life of Pi, the movie? It's an extraordinarily imaginative and beautiful film. The main character is named Pi. It's short for Piscine. And watch the. I'm going to show you a scene where Pi, now an adult, has just sat down to lunch with a new friend. His visitor is a young writer who was living in India and met an old man who told him to look up Pi when he went back to Canada, that Pi would tell him a story, the old man said, that would make him believe in God. Now, in this scene, there is one part which is a flashback, and it's actually from Pi's childhood, in which his mother tells him the Hindu myth of the god Krishna. And the subtitles didn't come through, but it actually is pretty clear. Just you'll probably pretty understand it anyway. But the story goes like this. Yashoda, the mother of Krishna, the Hindu god, says that that the baby Krishna has been eating dirt. "You naughty boy, you shouldn't have done that," she says. But he didn't. He didn't. And Pi corrects his mother and said, "He didn't." "That's right. Young Krishna said, I didn't eat dirt." So Yashoda said, "No? Well, then open your mouth." So Krishna opened his mouth, and inside was the whole universe. And that's part of the myth of the creation story that comes out of Krishna belief. But nevertheless, this is what it is. Now, so Pi now, and a full-grown man teaching at a college, sits down to lunch with this young Canadian novelist who has so far tried but failed to be able to write a novel. And he's asked Pi to tell him his story. And so, just watch this scene. Okay. On the one hand, I would suggest to you that this is very much classic expression of a lot of what people believe in our world of advanced modernity. I would also suggest to you that it's the sort of little film clip that often causes Christians to get a little upset. So here's the question. What comes most quickly to mind? Boy, do I disagree. This is just wrong, not just wrong, it's silly. How can we possibly do it? Or do we think, what do we find attractive here? Why is it attractive to you? What is it? And in other words, do you see what I'm getting at? It's possible to have two different reactions to something like this. And I would suggest to you that the column on the left ends the conversation, whereas the column on the right tends to at least potentially continue it. I'm not suggesting that we're not going to get to the point where we disagree with something or other and give our reasons. I'm saying, where is it that we begin and how do we come across? Merely as being disagreeable or as being willing to converse about these things and talk through them? One of the things that I've done often is to take film clips like this and use them in Sunday school classes and said, okay, all we're going to do is we're going to watch the film clip, and then for the rest of the hour, we're going to talk about the things in which we agree or find attractive, attractively communicated. And it's interesting how difficult sometimes that can be for people. I would suggest we need to help one another learn those skills if those conversations are going to be able to continue. Okay, that brings me to the last thing I want to bring up before I open it up for some Q&A and talking about it. And it's what I would call the process of discernment. It seems to me that What Margie and I have tried to do is to have these questions in mind every time we watch a movie or to lead a film discussion. First of all, to explore the film as story and as cinematic art. A story, I mean, who are the characters involved? How do they develop within the film? How are they described? Are they attractive characters? Are they meant to be? Are they sentimentalized or romanticized in some sort of way? In other words, to treat it as a story, as truly a story. Also as cinematic art. There's editing, there's dialogue, there's lighting, there's color. And to simply ask the question, how does the film work with these various things? What did you notice about the music, for example? It was interesting, for those of you who were here last night and I showed a film clip, Sully, several people said to me afterwards it was interesting that there was no music at all in the clip until the very end, when the first ferry boat actually came up to the edge of the airplane, and it was at that moment that music started in the background. It was as things resolved, and it was very carefully put there, and it was cued at that moment in such a way because that added to our experience of what was actually transpiring on the screen. So it's possible to talk about this in the same way that I always hope that if a pastor is preaching from a psalm, that he doesn't treat the psalm as if it's a series of propositions, but actually a piece of poetry. That sermon should be structurally different than one that is dealing with a passage, say, from a history book on the one hand, or an epistle, which is giving instruction on another. In other words, treating the genre with care. I also like starting with this with film discussions because they're neutral questions. This is an art form. People usually talk about that. I don't think the music, I hated the music, or I liked the music, or that really worked, or this sort of thing. And it's also very interesting to me that how often people come up with insights that I never noticed at all. We were having a film discussion. I forget even what the film was now, but it was something that Margie and I had seen a couple of times, and somebody brought up that they were so impressed with the color palette of the film. I'd never even thought about it. And then she described how the colors had subtly changed throughout the film, and she was right. I had seen it several times, missed it entirely, but it gave a whole new layer of meaning to this piece of art that I had already appreciated. So, explore the film as story and as cinematic art. And then to be able to ask, what's being communicated or what's being expressed? Artists are expressing something. And what's being communicated here? One of the things that I always ask people to do in film discussions is to, at this point, to try to be as objective as possible. The way I describe it is, okay, if we're watching Doctor Strange, and Scott Derrickson, as the director, happens to be in our living room at the moment, as we talk about what we heard or saw in this film, I would want it to be so carefully expressed and so objective that at the end, the director would say, you're right. That's what I wouldn't have said it that way, but that's what I was expressing here. Good job. You've listened well. That also is important for us as Christians because it means that we're taking the work of their hands as made in the image of God with great seriousness. We're not being dismissive of their artwork. We were talking earlier, and you said your mother, who's a portrait painter, said that the two questions to start with, or the thing to start with, is what are you trying to express? And then she always says, whatever it is, it's not trivial. That is a Christian view of art, it seems to me. And that is part of what we need to be able to communicate. And we can simply be demonstrating it in the way we lead the film discussions and hear from the people around it. What does it mean? Just because certain things are being communicated, it's good to talk, and I think Holly Ordway in particular has done a good job at helping us to see that even though certain words are used or certain concepts are expressed, they may not mean the same things that everybody means. So to go to the level of meaning, again, as objectively as we can. At this point, we're not agreeing or disagreeing. We're talking about a work of art. What is it expressing? And trying to get into it as clearly as possible. What's being made attractive here and how? And we need to recognize that films, just like every other art form, but film is very powerful in this, it can make good people look bad or, you know, just unfriendly or what have you. It can make morality seem old-fashioned and unfun and just negative. Or on the other hand, it can do the opposite. It can glorify somebody who's really quite evil. It can do all sorts of things. What is being made attractive here, whether it's ideas or characters or plot lines or lifestyles or whatever? What's being made attractive and how is it made attractive? Sometimes it's the music in the background. If you watch a film more than once, sometimes you'll know there's a theme song for various characters. And that theme song makes us feel happy, even though that character, as you think about it at the end of the movie, wasn't a very happy person at all, or whatever. What's being made attractive and how? And it's now that we get to the point where we're agreeing or disagreeing. And I suggest to you that we need to start with, where do we agree? In the film clip that we saw from Life of Pi, I agree as a Christian that, as a matter of fact, somebody can move from one religion to another in order to become conscious of the existence of the divine. That is very possible. It's not going to make them a Hindu, a Christian, or a Muslim, necessarily, but it nevertheless may open them to the idea of divinity or to the supernatural. I also agree that doubt can, in fact, be helpful. That we are not supposed to suppress our doubts. So many young adults are not allowed to, if they've grown up in a Christian family, it's a little hard to say, you know, I am just not sure. I just reread the book of Judges, and man, if that's inspired, I don't know. You read that last chapter? That's hard stuff. That's holy writ. What are we talking about here? But that's a good question. It's a good question. Every Christian should have that question as you read the book of Judges, as a matter of fact, it seems to me. Be able to think that through. Why would that be part of Holy Scripture? What does it entail and what does it mean? What does it teach us about God and about the fall and about redemption? So it seems to me that where we agree can even be surprising. And one of the things that I have tried to do consistently as we've led film discussions, especially with non-Christians, with groups of non-Christians over time, is to always pray ahead of time, Lord, help me to agree to something as a Christian tonight that's going to surprise my non-Christian neighbors. I'd like them all to say, you agree with that? I like hearing that in my living room. And the reason is because I know that most of them come already convinced that they know what I believe. And what I would like to do is to just jostle their confidence just a little bit so they begin to take another look or another listen at the gospel. And then, what do we question or challenge? Where do we disagree and why? I'm not suggesting that we stay away from that. But I do think, because I think it needs to be part of the discernment process, but nevertheless, I don't think it's the first thing off the bat to simply begin with that, to sort of stake out the ground where we disagree, and then the discussion begins to evolve into an argument pretty quickly. It seems to me that as we try to listen to people and as we ask these questions honestly and let the conversation go, it opens the door to safe conversation. And we have found over time, it's not always the case, But we've found over time that by the time we get to this question of where do we challenge, there's more of a willingness to hear where I say, well, on this I would disagree. There's a willingness to hear me say that without ending the conversation because they know I've already listened to them in a significant way as the conversation has progressed. Now, it's not perfect, of course, and sometimes it just ends anyway. And thankfully, I'm married to a woman who makes pies wonderfully. And you don't know how many times people have said to me on the way out the door, well, I thought that film discussion really sucked, but Margie's pies will come back next week. So, it's okay with me. Come on back. And then the last one. How can we talk about and live out the truth winsomely and imaginatively in a pluralistic world so that non-Christians might understand and be intrigued? For those of you who leaders of in the church or studying to move in that direction, I would like to suggest that every Bible study that you lead and every Bible study that you form within the church, people should be encouraged to answer that question at the end of every evening. Every time we've tried to have Bible studies in our home all the time with people. And often, I should say that what we've often done is invite our non-Christian friends as we've met people naturally. Some of those were the baristas. They got so interested in film and so on, and we said, hey, we're going to watch X, you know, some movie next week. You want to come? Sure, they'll come. And so on. And then after a period of time, when they found that we were safe, when we were really willing to listen to them, where they could see that we're Christians, but this wasn't just, this wasn't just putting them on the spot. We would sometimes, after praying about it, would say to one of them, you know, we also lead a Bible study every week. If you've never studied the primary documents about Jesus, you want to join us, you're welcome to. And a surprising number have said, yeah, I'll give that a try. And so they've come. And the manager of the coffee shop, the first time she came, I had invited her and she had said no for one reason or another. And but she was always interested in talking about all of this and so on. And then one day she said to me, you still holding the Bible studies on Thursday night? And I said, yeah. And this was earlier in the week. She said, I'll be there this week. And I thought, geez, we had decided to do some Bible study in the book of Isaiah at the time. It was mainly Christians. And I thought, Isaiah is not my top book for introducing non-Christians to the scriptures. But I thought, well, that's the way it was. So it was interesting. And I forget which chapter it was. But it was the text in which Isaiah goes into a description of idolatry and idols and how they make idols and they're just worthless and all those sorts of, and it's pretty much a prophetic rant about idolatry. And I thought, well, I'll have to trust the Holy Spirit on this one. And it was interesting because she said, we started the study, and I always have the manuscript written out so that all people are all using the same same piece of paper so that they're so we're not different translations and getting into all that sort of stuff. Anyway, so I said, okay, here's the text, hand it out. So we read it out loud, and I was about to go on into the discussion, and my friend, the manager, said, my gosh, she said, that is a description of my coffee shop. She said, that's who we are. That's it right there. And I thought, who would have thought? Who would have thought? She eventually came to faith. But I think that after we've studied together as a group of Christians, it's really good to ask ourselves the question, how can we talk about what we studied tonight in such a way that our non-Christian friends might be intrigued about it? So we always end our Bible studies with that, at least 10 to 15 minutes before the hour is up, to just say, okay, here's the assignment. Tomorrow you're going to bump into people at work, or you're going to do this, that, you know, whatever. You're going to bump into non-Christians, and somebody's going to say, what did you do last night? And you're going to say, well, I was with a church group. What'd you do? Well, we studied the Bible. Okay. The assignment of the group is, how can we describe honestly what we studied tonight in such a way that perhaps that non-Christian, when they hear us say it, would say, really? That's what you guys are talking about? Wow. That sounds interesting. Rather than just shutting down the conversation. And that's often the most difficult part of the Bible study, to be able to work through and to come up with good ideas. And that's also where people who are creative and imaginative can really be helpful in trying to express it. Because after all, if what we're studying in the scriptures is the truth of reality, we should be able to say it in a way that is intriguing rather than just in Christianese. Does that make sense? Okay. We have a few minutes that are left. If you have questions, I'm willing to try to field a few of them before we actually have to close. In case you want some resources on film, Eyes Wide Open, the revised version by Bill Romanowski, very, very good. Has an appendix in there full of questions about what you can ask about film and popular culture. Very, very helpful. Bountiful Light, Roy Anker, has a series of books in which he does really wonderful and thoughtful film reviews, which really are guides for discussion. And if you're just getting started in all of this, you might find Roy Anker stuff. It Was Good series of books that are available on the table out here, but from Square Halo Press, are really very good. It Was Good the Arts, It Was Good Music, and then It Was Good the Performing Arts. And then we have a publication called Critique, and there's samples. I think everybody got a free sample when you first came. And in almost every issue, I have at least one film review with a discussion guide, and we have all of those on our website. So if you want to go on, and these are not reviews that tell you what to think about the film, but a way to help you think about the film in light of apologetics and conversing about it in a broken world. So that's available if you want to take advantage of it. Any questions? Yes.